Just after 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and that must mean it's time again for Money Management with Opus 111 Group's Mike Mayo. Here's Mike.
Good morning, Happy New Year, and welcome to Money Management. My name is Mike Mayo. I'm with the Opus 111 Group. And we are here to talk with you, as we do every week, about the markets, the economy, and to hopefully give you some good insights that you can use to manage your investments and or deal with what you're seeing and hearing in the marketplace on a daily basis. So before we get too far afield, and by the way, just for a preview of coming attractions today, I'm going to be talking about this past week's market, talking too about some of the economic reports and so on that have come out during the week. But my main emphasis today is going to be on what I think of as keys to investing success. And please don't be having your pen ready to say, well, what's he think about Microsoft? No, it isn't going to be about stocks. It's more personal than that, more personal to you, that is. So, without further ado, the data dump for last week, we had the Dow ending the week at 37,466. The S&P closed at 4697. NASDAQ traded last at 14,524. Russell 2000 at 1952. The U.S. Treasury ran up over 4%. It closed Friday at 4.04%. Crude closed at $73.97 a barrel. Soft white wheat quoted at $6.75 a bushel. Gold settled the week at $2,051 an ounce, with silver ending at $2,337 an ounce. And that, as they say, is that. So we've had an interesting start to the year, but quite frankly, not really all that surprising. J.P. Morgan, the real J.P. Morgan, at the turn of the 20th century, he was asked how the stock market would perform. And he said, and I'm quoting, "It will fluctuate." Well, J.P., 100-some years later, that's still good information. It will fluctuate. Now, CNBC, my close personal friends there, who come up with any number of headlines and story leads to cause angst and aggravation to investors, had one that just really got in my craw this past week. It says, and I'm quoting, "Nothing seems to be working in 2024. Now, hold that thought. We just completed four trading days of a trading year. That particular comment was on Wednesday, the second trading day of the year. How you can make a comment like that is simply stupid. You can quote me on that. But in any case, you know, these mega cap tech stocks like Apple and others have underperformed. That's a technical term, meaning they went down to start the year, because some, quite frankly, have overstretched valuations. And then now the traders get all, I don't know what they get, weird, because the Fed didn't tell them exactly what day they're going to cut interest rates and by how much. So they start having the vapors, I guess you could say. Now, last Tuesday, on the first trading day of the year, the NASDAQ pulled back, and I'm saying that meaning pulled back from where it closed the end of the year, for, again, courtesy of my friends at CNBC, the worst day since October. Oh, my goodness. Worst day since, you mean you're talking 2 months? Oh, my goodness. That's forever. Anyhow, and then it closed lower Thursday for its fifth consecutive losing season. And yes, from our buddies there at CNBC, its longest losing streak since October of 2022. And what did we lose this week? Oh, about 4%. That's on the NASDAQ. And so, again, traders appear to be selling last year's tech winners. Most of them live in the NASDAQ. And so there's the uncertainty again about the Fed, so on and so forth. Now, they say that the NASDAQ was down 4%, worst, longest losing streak since October of 2022. The NASDAQ was up 43.6% last year, a.k.a. last week. And these guys have the audacity to sing the blues about a 4% drop. That's why I tell you, don't listen to the news. Don't listen to the headlines. The only people that they affect are short-term traders, and you folks aren't them. So, not mentioned in their story was the fact that on the same day where the Nasdaq had its worst day since October of 2022, 16 stocks in the S&P hit new 52-week highs. How can they do that? Didn't it say that the Nasdaq... Oh, my goodness. You mean things go up and down? I'm sorry. These people just really aggravate me to death sometimes. But, you know, and in the journal, it said while the... That's the Wall Street Journal. And while the index reported a gain of 24%, about 70% of the stocks in the entire S&P 500... lagged the index. In other words, they didn't get anywhere close to the same rate of return. Growth outpaced value. So if you're a value stock or a value fund or a value ETF, you didn't do so well. And, Jay Hatfield, he's CEO of Infrastructure Capital Management, had this quote that I thought was pretty good. He said, these short-term corrections are nothing out of the ordinary in a market that's coming off fresh highs and entering primary season. He said, this is perfectly normal, somewhat expected activity. It's a normal seasonal pattern that you have tax loss selling in the period before year end, and then you have gain harvesting in the period after. That's exactly what you've been seeing. The traders had pent up, well, they took tax losses last year, and they saved all the gains from the end of the quarter to sell into January, because now they won't be taxed on it until 2025. That's just good thinking. And so to say that they're selling to take profits is the end of the world, you know, you might want to relax before you act on that particular news. You know, whether any of this lasts, I really wouldn't look to the last few days as meaning anything specific. And then they're saying, okay, well, you know, if you're afraid of the market, you can put your money in a 5% fix because, wow, look at those interest rates are up. Well, here's a challenge. After you adjust that 5% for inflation and pay taxes at whatever your particular rate is, you could actually be earning a negative real return. Real return means after tax, after inflation. So, that isn't a good deal, is it? And plus, those 5% aren't necessarily guaranteed, because what happens is that the issues mature at some point, and now you have interest rate risk, which is simply, you don't know what the rate's going to be when it rolls over next time. Could be the same, could be higher, could be lower, but it is a risk. So now there's $6 trillion sitting in money market funds. That just hurts my head. And if you're one of the people who think that getting a fixed rate of 5% is a good decision, well, God bless you then. You know, I don't know what else to tell you. But let's assume 100% of the cash in the money market funds are individual investors who are thinking they're locking in 5%, which, again, we know isn't true. But realize that there's about another $4 trillion in institutional assets in institutional money market funds. A lot of people sitting on their hands, and there's a lot of money sitting in there. Now, that doesn't mean that there will be a flood into the stock market. No, no, no. But it does suggest that there's a lot of liquidity, available cash that can be invested basically overnight. You know, and I think one reason some investors are betting on another good year for stocks is that earnings are expected to rebound this year and next. So how about it? You know, earnings and are the one of two key drivers of the of stock prices. The other is, how are interest rates going? And so interest rates are no meaningful figure right now, and it looks as if earnings are going up. Why shouldn't shares go higher? I'm not saying they're going to go up 24% again. That's silly. But up is up. Now, what about this January effect? You know, you have no control over what happens to financial markets. The timing of bull and bear markets rarely lines up with your life events. And by the way, January effect says that these people who follow that believe that whatever happens in January, good or bad, will be the result, will flow into the rest of the year, good or bad. So that means what... Excuse me, the timing of these bull and bear markets means you have to take advantage of the opportunities to buy low. Remember, that's the good part, when they show up. Now, if you went to cash or tried to time the market, you surely likely did much worse than those who simply kept buying on a regular scheduled basis this past year. You know, dollar cost averaging, which is what you do in your retirement plans, buying every a fixed period with a fixed amount and the prices change. That's dollar cost averaging. Not a perfect strategy, but it does allow you to diversify over time, market cycles, and prices. You know, again, this January effect that says, okay, as January goes, so does the market. But understand, no part of January predicts the future. If you can count the number of times a negative January preceded a negative year or a positive year, along with the number of times a positive January started a negative or positive year. If you were to do that, and I did, the most frequent outcome was both January and the full year are rising. And that happened 52 of 99 years since 1925. But the second most frequent was a negative January feeding into a positive year. What's this? That happened 21 times. So that's often more than the down January, down year combination, which was only 17 times. So that January effect, 17 times over 100 years, not too heavy. But so if that down January has failed to predict the year more often than not, I don't see how the fortune-telling powers exist here. And you know, all we can determine is that stocks rise more often than not in both months and calendar years. So I think that's a pretty good thing to stay with. And that's why we say stay invested. You know, sometimes volatility is just volatility. Normal volatility will pair with what's called counter trends, and that's where recent leaders get hit. That happened during last year's correction. Large growth stocks led the rally through July, trailed when the markets went back, then took off again to new bull highs. They don't always win, and a shift of value later this year, I don't think, would be a big shock. But don't latch on to any of the reasons you might be reading or hearing for this rocky start and its so-called predictive powers. It doesn't mean that investors who have had free cash from tax loss harvesting in December are scared of buying. It doesn't mean fund managers are skittish. It doesn't mean tech companies have to put up or shut up and won't be able to. As I said, earnings are improving. Businesses mostly are past cutting costs in anticipation of the recession that never came. Private investment probably pick up some and driving future profits. Oh, you may have heard that this is an election year. Election years are historically bullish for stocks, with the S&P being 80% positive in an election year time period. So, suffice it to say, we think the bull market continues, and sitting on sidelines because January is stumbling out of the blocks isn't exactly a wise move. So, enough on that. Now, about some of the economic news that came out over the past couple of days. The U.S. labor market closed out last year very strong because the hiring was even more powerful than expected. This is according to the Labor Department on Friday, yesterday. It showed the December jobs report added 216,000 folks. National unemployment rate held at 3.7. The economists, and here we go with the case of, you know, making forecasts is a tough job, but economists surveyed by Dow Jones had been looking for an increase of just 170,000 and the unemployment rate to go up to 3.8. Well, so good news for us. Now, the strong labor market could mean that the Fed might potentially delay the first of its rate cuts. And that's, you know, traders have been looking forward to that. And that's one of the reasons the market sold off, because they're all doing heavy breathing, thinking, oh, my goodness, what if they don't cut the rates as soon as we thought? Who cares? You know, they'll cut them. You know, sit down, boys. Take a pill. You know, it isn't going to make that much difference. But anyhow, they got to have something to talk about, I guess. And understand, the labor market's almost always a lagging indicator. So we can expect the economy to weaken before you would start seeing hiring start slowing down. So this coming up Thursday, the CPI, Consumer Price Index report measuring inflation at our level, is due out. The last one that came out showed inflation down to 4% annualized. Hopefully that will continue at that or lower. We'll find out. Now, a company called Adobe Analytics is out with even more evidence of what was a strong holiday spending season. You know, they were talking about, oh, gee, people are going to keep their hands in their pockets. Nobody's going to be spending anything. Yeah, okay. They said that spending online, this is just online, rose 5% to a record $222 billion between the 1st of November and the end of the year. And he said, what's more, these higher sales reflect stronger demand, not the effect of inflated prices. According to the Adobe Digital Price Index, I'm not sure what that is, but it sounds impressive, e-commerce prices dropped 5.3% over the categories in December, so they had lower prices and more buying. Seems reasonable to me. Now, the key takeaway is that when you, for some reason, feel as if a recession is coming, well, lie down, take a pill, you know, have some bonbons. But, you're going to expect uncertainty. That's what happens. And the stock market won't necessarily drop, as plenty of historical data can tell you. And in our opinion, selling your stocks and waiting on the potential for what could be a recession is not a good strategy. Plus, you could be missing out on major gains in a recession if it doesn't show up. Here's one. In 2016, the economists at Citi Research, now those guys aren't chopped liver, they're, you know, that's high-powered stuff. They predicted that we would enter a recession in 2016 with a 65% probability. Well, let the record reflect, it never happened. From the start of 2016 through the end of 2019, the S&P put together a total return of 71%. Now, what if you would have responded to those headlines, that news story, that knee-jerk story, and sold your shares because, quote-unquote, a recession is coming? Now, bottom line is, nobody knows if and when a recession will arrive. No one knows how bad it would be if it did arrive or how long it'll last. And they certainly don't know how the stock market will perform. The challenge is that in many cases, anticipation of a recession can have a worse effect on the market than the recession itself. You know, thinking you curtail activities in anticipation of something that doesn't occur. That's not good. So, don't let recession forecasts derail your progress. Now, just a quick note on housing. It was a mixed bag in 23. I think real estate professionals will agree. Housing starts and existing home sales were weak. New home sales and home prices rose in spite of the mortgage rates. And you'll probably see modest gains all around in terms of start sales and prices. Now, driven by a large increase in home building and manufacturing projects, which more than offset smaller declines across most other categories, construction spending increased in November. And one little by the way that I think is rather significant, from the S&P Global Commodity Insights last month, and I'm quoting, America is exporting the same amount of crude oil, refined products, and natural gas liquids as Saudi Arabia and Russia produces together. Next time you start thinking about, we're a fading lily or something, you might want to consider the facts. So, excuse me very much. Keys to investing success. As some of you know, and others who are listening to me now will find out, I've been doing this, working with individual investors for over 50 years now. Yeah, 50, I know. I started when I was 2. And there's been a few things that have always kind of amazed me about investing and investors in different market environments. And what does it take to be a successful investor? It isn't always about, buying Tesla at 2 or Microsoft on the initial offering or anything like that. That's total luck. But there are some principles that I think have been reinforced over the last couple of years that apply. Now, I don't have these in particular order, but and they are just little blurbs, so I hope that this will make sense. Our economy, the U.S. economy, cannot be consistently forecast, and neither can the market be consistently timed. We believe that the highest probability method of you being able to achieve long-term returns from stocks is simply, as I keep suggesting, to remain invested all the time. Because through your share purchases, whether it's funds, ETFs, managed money, individual shares, You are long-term owners of those businesses. You are not speculators on the near-term trend of stock prices. All you get from that is ulcers. When you have drops when there have been drops in the broad stock market, and they can be frequent, and sometimes, as we've observed, even quite significant, you can check the record. But those declines have always been made up, overtaken, and passed as America's most consistently successful companies continue to innovate and grow. You see, that's stocks, American stocks, are the only place, well, I would submit that perhaps true for other country stocks as well, but stocks, in any case, are the only investment where you can actually directly benefit from people's ingenuity, ongoing ingenuity, drive, focus, all of those good things, because it's reflected in better earnings, better growth, better products, just better. Now, you may have guessed that I hold very true to this tenet, and that is that optimism is the only realism. Define for me why, if you can, why that shouldn't be a mantra for everybody. I'm serious. I mean, why? Show me when it hasn't been the case. I worked with a person once who was of the opinion, and this was true, that they couldn't have a positive opinion because everything always turns out bad. Now, can you imagine going through life thinking like that? Needless to say, that person and I didn't work together much longer after that. But in any regard, optimism is the only realism, because all successful long-term investing is goal-focused, strategy-driven. You must at all times have your investments driven by your strategy and never by current events. Again, the anti-headline thing, or pundit, or brother-in-law, or whatever. I read that Gen Z is getting a lot of their investment advice from their family. That's scary. I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm sure your family are nice people, but if they don't do this kind of thing all the time, and I'm not trying to aggrandize myself, but it's just like any other profession. If you don't do it all the time, there's going to be things you don't know or haven't been made aware of or whatever. And so just relying on familial advice, you might as well just put your money in a basket and set fire to it. Let's see here. Sorry. Yes. Charlie Munger, who just recently passed away, he was Mr. Buffett's partner forever. An amazingly smart man. And he was always, if you read his stuff, he's pretty witty. Matter of fact, there's a book, and I would recommend this to anyone who is an investor or of any type, a fan of Mr. Munger's. A book called Poor Charlie's Almanac just came out, and it has a lot of his good sayings and thoughts and what have you in there. And I want to share this one with you. It says, and this is Charlie Munger, I'm quoting, "If you're not willing to react with equanimity to a market decline of 50% two or three times a century, you're not fit to be a common shareholder, and you deserve the mediocre result you're going to get compared to the people who do have the temperament, who can be more philosophical about these market fluctuations," unquote. Now, that's pretty strong stuff, but he's right. If you are going to be having the vapors every time the headlines go sideways, you better just stay with savings accounts, because your psyche won't be able to take the pressure. That's my opinion, personal opinion. Now, unaided, human nature is totally incapable of detaching its investment policy brain from current events or trends for any length of time. That's the issue, because you're being inundated with this stuff. And it will make the same fatal mistakes, panicking out of temporary declining markets and piling into whatever is the hot fad du jour. Now, this is a main reason for why folks have underperforming portfolios. Now, by way of background, the National Retail Federation, reported that 200.4 million, I don't know how they count these folks, but they did, 200.4 million of about the 340 million people currently wandering around in the U.S., and that included some 75% of all adults, shopped either online or in brick-and-mortar stores over the 5 days of Black Friday weekend. Well, I thought everybody only shopped online. That's the conventional wisdom, isn't it? Yeah, well, anyway. Now, why did they do that, you asked? Well, why did the great majority of the American public rush to shop and spend records amounts of money over just those 5 days? Well, the answer's pretty obvious, right? Because retailers lower their prices by a bunch over that weekend. And so herein lies a great lesson for investors. Because in most aspects of our economic lives, we behave the same way. In other words, we're attracted to those goods and services we need, or just want, more and more strongly the more you see the prices reduced. On the other hand, you will likely postpone those purchases, or maybe look for less expensive substitutes when prices are raised. You know, that isn't something you have to think much about. It's just essential to your nature. So what makes it frustrating to me, based on 50-plus years of working with individual investors, is that when it comes to investing, most people will instead behave the exact opposite way. It is crazy. I remember asking my manager when I very first started, what do you tell somebody when stocks go up? Because they just didn't, nobody responded to it. You know, these investors will fly toward those markets or sectors or funds that have experienced the greatest price increases. You don't think that had something to do with the tech run-up in the last quarter? Their thinking, I use that term in quotes, apparently is that when the price of a financial asset rises a bunch, chasing after it indicates a belief that it's going to keep going, simply because it has gone up so much. In other words, their brains seem to be telling them that the value is directly related to price. Or perhaps that an investment's potential to rise further is to be a direct function of how much it's up already. In another way, you know, they think that the higher an investment price has gone, the greater its perceived value and the less its risk. Well, that's about 200% wrong. On the other hand, they'll sell out of even the soundest investment simply because the price falls sharply. Please realize that the company is not the share price. I was giving a class, I was teaching a class, an adult education class in 1987 when we had our 22% one-day sale. And the class happened to be the day after the market dropped, and they were all surprised that I was there because they thought I'd be, I don't know what they thought I'd be doing, but running around with a fire hat on or something. And I'll say, I said to them, but I'll say to you, McDonald's still made hamburgers, U.S. Steel still made steel, GM still made cars. The prices was the only thing that changed. That was it. But it's human nature, and the challenge is that it's clearly wrong. As one Wall Street humorist has observed, this guy was spot on. The stock exchange is the only place on earth where when they have a big sale, everyone runs screaming out of the store. I mean, think about it. When the markets are sold off, people are saying, "Ooh, what should I sell? I should sell something." No, you should be looking for things to buy. Just like what we've seen this little sell-off here this week. You know, all those big-name stocks that were so high. You might want to look at your shopping list and say, some of these good high-quality companies might be in the range I might want to be considering them now because they are cheaper. Not worse, just cheaper. You know, if you look at that line of reasoning in so many ways, you realize how little sense it makes because every fiber of your rational economic self tells you that price and value are inversely correlated, meaning as one goes down, the other rises and vice versa. You know, even more costly to you is the perception that the more an investment's price falls, the less potential value it has, the greater the risk. I just want to reiterate that, these are one size fits all. I'm not talking about buying one issue or another because how you do, the short, very short version of all this is how you do is up to you. not your advisor, not the market, not even the investment itself, but how you emotionally can deal with this stuff. Because, you know, and hopefully to disabuse you of some of these, I don't even know what the right word is, inaccurate thoughts that folks have about what the markets do in terms of when they're churning around, if you will. You know, because, again, the perception that the more an investment's price falls, the less value it has and the greater risk, that is totally opposite of what it is in real. I mean, I'm assuming a good quality company, okay? Not some fly-by-night deal. Excuse me, but take the S&P 500. It's composed of actually about 503 of the largest, most profitable, most soundly financed, most innovative, and most transparent companies headquartered in this country. Now, you buy their services often. You probably wouldn't start shopping, buying their stuff just because their share price went down. Let me check the paper. I don't know if I can buy this. Sorry. Because these company stocks, they're in the market every day. They are highly sensitive to current events and trends in the world at large, so they're going to be affected. And it's my experience that short-term price movements are often driven as much by the ebb and flow of investor sentiment as by the company's value as successful businesses. And the more those prices drop, the stronger becomes the impulse to sell by amateur investors. Now, a good example of stock prices being particularly sensitive to external shocks was the reaction to the pandemic. The S&P was down by a third in the space of a month. People just flipped right out. The investor panic was everywhere, as was their selling. The result was that those severely depressed share prices at the end of that month haven't been seen since. The market has not been that low. So this can give you the beginning of an idea of what we, as your advisors, really do. Simply stated, we're in your life not to forecast the economy. Excuse me, not to try to time the markets. You can't do that consistently. We're here to remind you, in moments of extreme market stress particularly, to focus on the enduring value of the superior companies you've invested in rather than their random, highly random market prices. Ben Carlson, who does a great job, he's a blogger, has come up with some thoughts that I think need to be added into this presentation. I don't know what's going on with the throat, I apologize. But in any case, human psychology causes many of us to constantly worry something bad has to happen after something good. So you're getting a lot of that right now after the market's up a ton. You know, this can't last. All the good news is already in the market. And good times can't last forever, so, you know, hey, we get it. It's reasonable to consider downside risk. Consider, not assume, expect. It's also important to remember that good times can last a lot longer than you think. Good years tend to cluster in the stock market. You look back at annual gains for the S&P since 1928, that's a long term, and you find when big gains were followed by more big gains. Happens more often than you think. There are 15 separate sector clusters spanning 40 years in total where double-digit up years were followed by double-digit up years. That's 40% of the time. And if you get a string of good years in a row, the 19 to 21 stretch was pretty good. And of course, that was followed by 2022, which wasn't so hot. 2023 kind of made up for it. Good returns are followed by good returns most times. But sometimes good returns are followed by losses. And that's what makes investing in the stock market both exhilarating and infuriating, especially in the short run. But what about those long run returns? Yeah, the median 10-year total returns following years that were up 20% was up 188%. That's over the past 95 years. Okay, so that's a little long. But the point is that it's up a bunch. And you wise investors, I should say, Focus on the long run and avoid allowing the short run noise and craziness to dictate your investment decisions. Your long run returns are the only ones that matter. Short run returns, however, get all the dang publicity. So don't focus on any reasons you might be seeing for the year's so far rocky start and allegedly predictive powers. Doesn't mean investors who had free cash are scared of buying. Oh, and as I said, this is an election year with S&P 500's S&P 500 returns positive over 80% of the time. Now, here's some things you might just want to make note of. The only, my opinion, only rational long-term definition of money is purchasing power. What can you buy with your money when you want to buy it, whether it's today or 20 years from now? You have to maintain your purchasing power over time to be successful. And so the goal of long-term investing can therefore only be the growth of your purchasing power. So in the long run, the owners of successful businesses, that's shareholders, must make far greater returns than do lenders to those same businesses who are the bondholders. That's because if rational owners couldn't earn a significant return above their borrowing costs, well, they wouldn't borrow. So this is supported by the historical record. Over the nearly last century, the S&P 500 compounded, after including inflation into the computations, at 7% per year, annual average return. The most comparable bond index, corporate bond index, and inflation adjusted, 3%. It's not just that it's twice. It's just that it's twice compounded over a lot of years. That's why long-term bonds don't really work for investors. So the true test of an investment's long-term safety is what has its long-term total return been in excess of inflation. That's why to say that bonds are safe simply because you get your money back at some point, your principal, what have you earned? Did you earn enough to beat inflation? And that's true for stocks too, I hasten to add. But I mean, it's especially true for bonds when you don't have any opportunity to increase the return because those returns are fixed. See, the excess return to stockholders has historically been more than twice that paid to bondholders. And so that matters most, therefore, because stocks have been significantly safer in the sense of creating and continuing your buying power than have bonds. But the return of stocks has been considerably more random. I think that's fair. And that simply means higher highs and lower lows, so you get volatility in both directions. How do you like that? Balance of another kind. So stated another way, the prices of mainstream stocks have gone down often, sometimes significantly, but not for long. And after which, as we said earlier, whatever that drop was, they made it up and have come back higher than. Okay, since 1980, the cash dividend on the S&P rate of growth has gone to nearly 6%. Over that time, since 1980, consumer inflation has averaged about 3%. So dividends that are growing faster, significantly faster than inflation, will be a critical need to your long-time retirement needs. And sure, as they do every year, markets will be sure to face new challenges. But if you apply these lessons and stay invested, stay with quality, don't listen to the dang headlines, you'll probably do pretty well. So that's it for this week's program. I hope you found it helpful. I really do. Again, looks like the Zags are back. Watch them tonight. Who we got? I don't know who we got. Somebody we got to beat today. But anyhow, go Zags. We'll be back next Saturday with more information. Thank you very much for listening. I really appreciate it. This is Money Management, powered by the Opus 111 Group. And my name is Mike Mayo.
Join us again next Saturday morning at this same time for the financial insight, opinion, and perspective of Money Management with Opus 111's Mike Mayo. Have a question or comment? Email us at info@opus111group.com or visit our website, opus111group.com. www.moneymanagement.com. Sections of this radio show contain forward-looking statements that are not guarantees of future performance. This information is from sources we believe to be reliable. However, we cannot guarantee that it is accurate or complete. These comments are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, nor as a recommendation to buy or sell any security or investment product mentioned in this show. Investing involves risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Individual circumstances do vary. Please consult an investment professional prior to making any investment decisions.